Hello there. This is CSW, creator of Incarnation Red. If you enjoy Incarnation Red and want to help keep it going, support the show on Patreon via the link listed in the episode notes down below. In return, you'll receive a variety of perks ranging from a monthly Q&A / horror gaming livestream to a chance of having a mini episode made based off of you and your fears released on the main RSS feed for everyone to hear. Additionally, all patrons receive access to an exclusive patron-only Discord server where you can chat with fans and myself, watch live streams of pre-release episode editing, and join in on regular horror movie nights. I rely on your support to keep the show going, so any amount, no matter how small, will help me bring you more scary stories more often. Link is in the episode notes down below. Additionally, if you are a fan of audio drama podcasts in general and want early access releases plus bonus content from Incarnation Red, absolutely sign up for Apollo Plus, a creator-owned platform where every subscriber helps audio fiction creators for just $10 a month. You can think of Apollo Plus almost as the Netflix of audio dramas, offering exclusive content, ad-free and early access releases, behind-the-scenes content, supercuts, and a whole lot more, all by supporting the creators you already know and love. With Apollo Plus, 70% of the revenue goes directly to us creators and provides all of us, both creator and listener, with a place to enjoy the shows we love, such as Afflicted, 13, and of course Incarnation Red, and a whole lot more. And of course, Hemophobia, my upcoming horror podcast, will be there too, so join Apollo Plus through the Apollo Podcasts app or by going to apollopods.com/plus, that's P-L-U-S. Incarnation Red is a horror anthology podcast and thus contains material not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Also, this episode features voice acting contributions from two very talented people, It-Me of the podcast Inco and Tal Manier of the podcasts What Will Be Here, Side Questing, and Someone Dies in This Elevator. If you haven't listened to any of their stuff, please do yourself a favor and go do so. Their shows are linked in the episode notes down below. Hope you enjoy.
You don't want to go in there all by yourself, do you?
Incarnation Red.
Episode 26. Blackout, Part 1.
They said it's going to be a big one. Going to be one that lasts a while. Lasts all night.
Said a 60% chance at 7 up to 80 at 8, then a 100% chance all the way through the night, until late morning, even. But here in my living room, well, it doesn't seem so bad. I can see little Zane rolling his Tonka trucks back and forth on the carpet. I see Isabella with her Barbie dolls. And James, my big man, yet still so little. He parades around the room back and forth, looking through the window curtains. But he's okay. We're all okay. It's just a few little lights and sounds. Sandra comes in holding flashlights, sets them on the table behind the couch. I smile at her, and she leans down and kisses me on the cheek.
She sits down behind James and runs her fingers through his hair. It's late May, just where summer meets spring, and school's been out for a week. The kids are home all the time now, here to welcome me when I get home from work, telling me all the things they did with their mother that day. It's been good for Sandra, and good for me too. Though I see the kids about as often as in any other season, I get to think of my house, my home, as a nest full of birds. Even as the kids grow older, and Sandra and I do as well. Because some things never change. Just as this house will always be, for us at least, a home. The dog audibly putters around in the kitchen. I whistle and he comes in, settles at my feet. I smile at him, and Zane and Isabella smile at him too, laughing, and Sandra smiling too. I look at James. He stares at the ceiling, mouth unmoved. The television shows me deepening colors on a map. Green, orange, red. I tell James he'd better go and brush his teeth before bed. He looks at Sandra, and she nods down at him. After he leaves, I turn up the volume 2 notches. The weatherman tells me that flash flood warnings are effective in this county, that county, certain streets. My county is highlighted in orange. A flash flood warning is effective, but I'm not concerned. Our house is on a hill, isolated and standalone. We'll be fine. James comes back in the room and I turn the TV back down, ask him if he brushed his teeth. He says he did, without looking at me. He's looking at the television. It's just a few little lights and sounds, I remind him. It's what I tell him every time there's a storm, and I've said it to him at least 3 times today. He still checks the windows, walks around compulsively, sits taciturn and pale. Sandra says he takes after me, but I'm not sure. If he did, maybe it'd be easier for me to comfort him, to convince him not to be afraid of things like lightning or thunder. He's a child, I remind myself. He doesn't understand just how trivial a storm really is, or how sturdy our house is, and how long it has stood this way through countless storms just like this one. There's nothing for him to be afraid of. Nothing for any of us to be afraid of. I look at the clock. It's 9:03. 3 minutes past the kids' bedtime. I mute the television and tell the kids it's time for bed. They all look at me with large eyes, but they don't say anything. Don't whine or beg or raise any of the usual qualms. They just look at me, then look down quietly. I sigh, turn to Sandra, who's still rubbing her fingers through James's hair. She eyes me with a slightly downturned head. What is it, guys? I ask. What's wrong? Isabella looks up at me. She asks me if our house is going to be okay. I smile confidently at her. Of course our house will be okay, I tell her. There's nothing for you to worry about at all. These walls are strong and the roof is even stronger. Nothing bad's going to happen, okay? Then Zane looks up at me. He asks me how long the thunder and lightning will be going on. I don't know, bud, I reply. It might be a long time. But that's okay, because all it is a little water. Like a bath. You're not scared of a bath, are you? I teasingly waggle my fingers at him, and he laughs. There's nothing to worry about, I repeat. All a storm is just... James, what is a storm?
It's just a few little lights and sounds.
Right. So if you guys go on to bed now, I promise
you... But what if lightning hits the house?
I turn to James. His eyes seem somehow even larger. I turn to the others. All sense of comfort, of ease, it's completely gone from their faces. They start asking me things, all over one another, asking if lightning will really strike the house, if lightning is going to hit one of them, if Scout will get hit by lightning when we let him out to do his business. Questions, questions, questions. I glance at James, who sits silently, like always, his eyes brimming with even more questions. He hasn't asked them yet, but I... The lights go out. Screams. Everyone is screaming. Isabella, Zane crying inconsolable and unintelligible pleas. James moaning his same objections in a tone almost I told you so. Scout barking in protest while Sandra yells for everyone to quiet down, stay calm, and they settle down almost immediately. While I don't even say anything. Just as Sandra is fumbling with a flashlight, the lights come back on. The kids are quieter still. Sandra and I both exhale in relief. Sandra begins the protocol she and I discussed earlier, knowing full well that the situation might happen, just as we know now that a power blink could very well happen again at any minute. So, she distributes flashlights to each child, complete with fresh new batteries, and runs the kids through all the basics.
Okay, now listen, guys. Your flashlight is purely your own, and you can use it however much you want if the lights go out again, okay? Now, if the lights do go out again, you should all come find me or Daddy. And if you can't find us, find each other, then look for us together. And listen, now, this is the most important part. If the lights go out, don't be scared. Nothing bad is going to happen. Just find me and Daddy as soon as you can. Okay, sweet peas?
They believe her. She hands me our flashlight and I thank her. Smile at her. She smiles back, then turns away. After another 10 minutes or so of the same repeated questions, the kids reluctantly agree to go to bed. Sandra escorts Isabella and Zane off to make sure they brush their teeth and get settled, while James sits on the fireplace hearth. Champ, I say to him, go and get ready for bed now. He nods sullenly, then stands and walks off into the hallway. As he reaches the corridor, he stops.
Dad?
Yes? He doesn't turn around.
Are you sure our house is strong enough to stand?
I stand up, walk over to him. Buddy, I say to the back of his head, and then he turns around. I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. I pat his shoulder, grip it briskly. Go and get ready for bed now, I repeat, and he does so. As he walks down the hall, I watch him. It's strange, I think. Sometimes I know what he's thinking, but other times he can surprise me and say things that... Screaming again. Barking again, Sandra's loud, tired voice again. Mine joins in, urging everyone to keep calm and quiet down, use your flashlights, come towards my voice, but nothing helps. Their screams are constant, unvarying, and nothing I say so much as begins to soothe them. Nothing I say. I run a hand over my face. I turn around and start groping for me and Sandra's flashlight, pat the recliner a few times, hit wood, find the coffee table, snatch it up, and start feeling for the switch on it. Distantly, I hear Sandra telling them to come closer to her, which they do, and to quiet down because it's all okay, which they do. And just like that, at her touch, the kids are quieted down before I can even find the damn switch, calm and soothed before the lights even... come back on. I peek into the hallway and see all three kids huddled up close to their mother, clutching to her clothes. Sandra eyes me with something that looks like relief, but mixed with something else. I look back at her. After that, the kids finish brushing their teeth and head off to bed. I sit in bed reading a couple chapters of a novel. The power hasn't gone out for some time now, and with all the kids in bed, I can rest easy. After all, if the kids are in bed, tucked in, with the lights off, it won't matter if the power goes out and stays out all night. All the lights will already be off, and the kids can sleep soundly, without disturbance. Eventually I close the book, then reach to turn my bedside lamp off. But I stop. I stare across from me, at the dark space against the wall, outside the reach of the lamplight. I turn to Sandra, who's already on her side, facing away from me, seemingly asleep. Then I look up at the ceiling. If there were no ceiling, I vacantly muse, perhaps I'd be looking at James himself, tucked in bed. I wonder what spot on the ceiling I'd have to look at to be looking at him. And if I am looking at him, then what is he doing? And if I'm not, then what am I looking at? I look back up across the room, stare at the shadows. It looks almost as if they've moved, but they haven't. I open my mouth. Sandra, do you think the kids trust me?
Sure they do.
Even James?
Yep.
I don't say anything. Just sit and look at the ceiling.
I really wouldn't worry about it, sweetheart. If he has the nightlight in his room, he makes it through the night just fine.
I inhale sharply. He has the nightlight on in his room? I ask.
Yeah?
I grit my teeth. Run my hand through my hair.
Okay.
I shuffle down into the covers, turn and fluff my pillow, lay my head on it, reach my hand out for the lamp. But it goes out before my hand reaches it. I stay still. I hold my breath. I don't move anything. My hand still suspended mid-reach. All I do is lay and wait, staring at the ceiling, listening for James's voice. Sandra whips out of bed instantaneously. I follow suit, rushing through the master bedroom door. I can barely see the living room in the moonlight, but already I can hear crying from Isabella and Zane's rooms. I follow behind Sandra until we both reach the stairs, and she looks at me like I'm crazy, like I'm doing something completely unheard of, and I tell her I'm getting James, and she says...
No, you go get Isabella and Zane. I'm getting James.
She says it like some kind of winning, victorious retort, then shuffles up the stairs before I can even say anything to her, so I throw my hands down and rush over to Isabella and Zane's rooms right next to one another. I open both doors at the same time, tell them it's Dad, don't worry, it's okay, they're perfectly safe, but of course they don't stop sobbing. Meanwhile, upstairs, Sandra probably already has James back asleep in her arms. But he isn't. James is still screaming. She's already reached him, and I can hear her talking to him softly, but he won't stop. He just keeps screaming, screaming, screaming. Screaming like I've never heard him scream before. Screaming like I've never heard anyone scream before. Meanwhile, Isabella and Zane are sitting up in bed weeping their eyes out, and I keep saying things, the same things I've been saying, and that Sandra says too, but they just won't stop, and I cussing myself for not having brought me and Sandra's flashlight. It's back in the bedroom, and trying to go get it would only make things worse. How, I don't know, since Isabella and Zane seem just as terrified and miserable with me than without me, and I could run and go get that piece of mechanical plastic that they trust more than their father, or I could go upstairs and see what the hell James is screaming bloody murder about, but instead, I just scream, "Will everyone please just shut the hell up?" Silence. I open my eyes. The lights are back on. Isabella and Zane are both staring at me. Tears stream down their cheeks. Horror is etched plainly on their faces. But for one blessed, merciful second, they are all just silent. Until that second ends, and then they cry even louder than before. Eventually, Sandra comes down the stairs, James in her arms, holding on to her and pressing his head into her shoulder. She looks at me almost before she emerges from the staircase. Her eyebrows are heavy, disapproving, disappointed. Then she looks at Isabella and Zane, sitting on the living room floor again and only recently having stopped crying, tears still plastered on their cheeks. She reaches the bottom of the stairs and puts James down on the fireplace to sit, and sits next to him, pressed up against him, her arm wrapped around his waist. I open my mouth, and she speaks.
Okay, guys. Do you want to watch one more cartoon before bed?
Isabella and Zane are cheering with approval before the sentence is even complete, and even James nods sullenly. Sandra looks at me.
Does that sound okay with you, Dad?
I look back at her and I don't blink. She doesn't either. Sounds perfect, I reply. Isabella and Zane's tears seem to have evaporated with this new suggestion. I reach for the TV remote, turn the TV to our DVR where we've taped a few episodes, and hit play. Sandra smiles at the two on the floor, then squeezes James' shoulders and stands up to leave, headed toward our bedroom. I immediately rise to follow her into the room, but before I can even make it halfway, she says to me,
James wants to speak with you.
Then walks away, closes the door behind her. I approach James. He looks up at me while Isabella and Zane sit oblivious in front of the TV. You wanted to talk to me, champ? I ask. He looks away from me, looks at Isabella and Zane, then back to me.
Can we talk about this in the kitchen?
I nod and take him by the hand. Once we're there, I turn on the lights and kneel down to meet his eye level. What's up? I ask. James' eyes are lost, staring at nothing. I hold his shoulder, shake him a little, gently, just to get his attention. Champ, what is it?
I saw something in my room.
I exhale in relief, then recollect myself. What'd you see? I ask. He won't look me in the eye. Our faces are hardly more than a foot apart, and he fights eye contact relentlessly, turning in any direction possible to avoid it. His lip quivers, but not with tears. It looks more like the urge to speak, like something pressing against his lips trying to escape. But whatever it is he wants to tell me, it's more than his little mouth can bear, more than his mind can bear to say out loud. I put my finger under his chin and raise his face to look at mine. James, I say. What did you see? He looks up at me, eyes still blank. Then they lighten back up, and he speaks.
Can you just please go upstairs to look, just two? To make sure everything's okay?
I nod. Tell them of course I can. I lead the way with James following close behind me. Very close. We ascend the stairs, reach the game room, which takes up the bulk of the upper floor, James' bedroom at the far end of it. The lights are off. I feel James grip my shirt at the lower back. I flick the light switch and his grip loosens. I walk forward, briskly, to assure James that there's nothing to be afraid of. That his room is a room like any other. Which it is. Once we've reached his bedroom door, I turn around and kneel down to face him. Okay, James, I say. Is there anything in the game room you want me to look at? Anything in this room that is scaring you or that you want me to check out? He shakes his head.
I didn't see anything in this room, just in my bedroom.
I nod. Okay then, let's take a look. I stand, grab the doorknob, and open the door. I proceed in, James reluctantly following, and I turn on the lights. I scan the room briefly, scrutinizing with a somewhat feigned sense of thoroughness, and after two surface scans, I notice his nightlight in the corner, still turned on. I reach towards it and flick the switch on its front, turning it off. At the same time, every light in the house goes out. Again. James is gripping at me again like a wild crow, and I tell him the same consolation I've said so many times that it's lost all meaning, not that it had any to begin with. Sandra proved that much. keeping me up even later into the night as if to punish me, as if to prove a point, to show me all the ways she can bring these children happiness and all I can bring them is tears. Like she was the only one who could possibly have gone to get James when the lights went out because she was the only one who could actually...
Dad, please can we go? Please don't make me stay here now when the lights are off. Dad!
Buddy, I reply. It's the same room. Hell, it's the same entire house, whether the lights are on or off. I see nothing. In the dark, I see nothing, but I wonder, am I looking at something without seeing it? And if I am looking at something, am I still looking at it? Is it still where it was when I first looked, or is it somewhere else? Is it in the corner across the room? Is it closer to me than it was just a moment ago? Is it coming towards me right now? James, we need to go see your brother and sister. They need us. I turn around, grip James by the shoulder, and start to walk out of the room. James is saying something, but I can't really hear him. I can't hear anything, no matter what I think I might have. All I can perceive is my own feet running. I can't see where or towards what or anything at all. I just know I'm running and pulling James' inert body along with me. I practically collide with the game room wall, then turn left toward the stairs where I can already see the beams of a flashlight. I carefully hold the handrail, maneuver myself and James down the stairs, which were always so stable, so easy to descend, but now are a loose collation of matter and empty space. But I make it to the bottom with James, then rush over to the floor where Isabella and Zane hold their flashlights yet continue to whimper. Sandra is nowhere to be found. I form a huddle around the four of us.
Good job, guys.
I congratulate them.
See, when you turn on the flashlight, there's nothing to be afraid of. We're all fine, see?
Through their sniffling, Zane and Isabella manage to nod. I pat their shoulders, then lean back. I let my head fall backward, look up at the ceiling where the beams of their flashlights form bright, hopeful circles. I sigh and close my eyes. When I open them, something is wrong. I raise my head back, lean in towards Zane and Isabella. Their flashlights are flickering, in and out, and weakening with each flicker. I open my mouth to preemptively console, but before I can even say anything, the lights flicker rapidly and desperately for one last time, then, helplessly, fade. Incarnation Red is created, written, narrated, and edited by CSW. The opening theme was written and performed by Annika Hansen. All music and sound effects used in this podcast are created in-house from scratch. For more information and regular updates, follow me on Twitter at CSW_horror or visit my website CSWhorror.com or like the show's Facebook page, Incarnation Red, as always spelled R-E-A-D. For behind-the-scenes looks and other scary content, you can follow me on TikTok or you can follow me on Instagram at Incarnation Red. Thank you for listening.